1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This week on Viewpoints.
When a really big tree, you know, like a 100-foot Doug fir, when that falls, it sounds like a bomb has dropped and it shakes the earth.
We speak with a former elite firefighter about battling the most destructive fires out west. Then,
we targeted Black communities and said that they were blighted when in fact they were vibrant communities central to life for the many people who live there.
How millions were displaced under the cover of urban renewal. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
July 4th may be over, but Macy's July 4th sale is still on with everything you need to keep the vibe going all summer long. Hosting? Turn your backyard into a party destination with 40 to 50% off outdoor dining and entertaining. Beachbound? Turn heads in this season's hottest swimsuits, sundresses, and more. Get away with the kids? Superpower their summer with 25 to 60% off toys from Nerf and more. But hurry, because the sale ends tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
That's the sound of your money going further. Because with new McValue at McDonald's, you always get more than you expect. Buy a sausage burrito and add a sausage McMuffin for just $1. Your crew needs fuel before practice? The $5 meal deal is always on time. Late night turn to all night? Get a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for, yep, just $1. Your money is having a time. New McValue at McDonald's. Get more than you expect. Prices and participation may vary. Valid per item of equal or lesser value.
Wildfire season in the West typically spans from May through November, but this year, in the dead of winter, California saw one of its most destructive wildfires on record. In early January, hurricane-force winds swept across LA County, fueling the spread of 14 separate fires. It was the perfect storm of powerful winds mixed with drought conditions, low humidity, and overgrown vegetation from the fall and winter. By month's end, more than 57,000 acres had burned. Over 18,000 buildings were piles of rubble and 30 people had lost their lives. The LA fires were the largest January fire event in the state's history, according to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. The speed and intensity of the flames also caught many people off guard, and sadly, this is the new reality. Wildfires used to be contained to specific geographic areas in select seasons. Now, when and where these fires happen are much more unpredictable. On top of this, for firefighters on the front lines, they're still being asked to do more with less. One of those people was Kelly Ramsey. Starting in 2020, she spent 2 years on a hotshot crew in California. This is a small but highly trained and specialized team of firefighters that fight the most difficult and dangerous sections of a wildfire.
You have to train, you know, you train for the 6 months of the off season, hiking with at least 45 pounds, but usually more like 65, 70 pounds on your back, up really steep slopes, running sprints, push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, wall sits, weight training. So, you know, you do this training montage for the 6 months of the off season, then you show up and train with the crew for a month, doing more of the same, but worse. And then the season starts and you're not only hiking with that heavy gear, but you're either running a chainsaw as a sawyer who's clearing a bunch of brush and trees in order to create a firebreak or a handline, what we just call line. Or like me, you're in what's known as the dig and you're digging with a hand tool for, you know, 12, 16, sometimes 24 hours a day. And your assignments are usually 14 days at a time. And then you have 2 or 3 days off and then you go out for 14 days again.
Interestingly, Ramsey wasn't a career firefighter before joining the hotshot crew. She started out as a wilderness trail worker, clearing fallen trees from hiking paths in Northern California. But after spending enough time watching wildfires grow more out of control, she felt drawn to the work.
The basic qualification to be a wildland firefighter is called a red card. I can think they used to be red back in the day. Now it's usually like this little yellow piece of paper. But you get it by doing a bunch of classroom training, and then you have to do the pack test where you carry 45 pounds for 3 miles and you have to complete it in under 45 minutes. You do that test and a number of other tests, and then you're qualified at the most basic level.
From there, she worked her way up, gaining more experience and muscle. After some persistence, she eventually landed a spot on a hotshot crew of 20 firefighters. She was the only female on the team. Currently, women make up only about 5% of specialized wildfire crews. Ramsey says the hardest part was getting her fellow firefighters to treat her the same.
Just a big part of it was really trying hard, going over the top to show them that I was a hard worker and that I was going to fight to be a faster hiker and better at digging. And, you know, the more I did that, the more I sort of like bent over backwards trying to prove myself physically and mentally at the job, the more I could see that I earned their respect. And just as time passed and we started to become friends, things became a lot more comfortable.
From there, the hard part began. Her first season was 2020, the worst fire year in California history. By the end of 2020, more than 33 people were dead, and 4.2 million acres and around 11,000 structures were burnt. One of the fires, the August Complex, charred over a million acres.
It started as 37 fires, but they basically merged into this one gigafire, the first gigafire in California. So it was a really crazy time to be new in the job. And then 2021 was also a pretty wild and severe fire season. And the Dixie Fire, which happened that year, came pretty close to the August Complex. I think it was over 900,000 acres. So some really intense large fires and some really extreme, you know, fire behavior that had never really been seen before.
The longer she was on the job, the clearer it became. These fires weren't just getting bigger. They were behaving differently. More unpredictable, faster, hotter, and cropping up all at the same time. Ramsey remembers one day where it felt like the punches just kept on coming. It was Labor Day 2020, and she was up in Northern California trying to slow down the August Complex fire.
We're doing what's called mop-up, which is when you try to cool off part of the fire that's already out. So we're doing mop-up. It's a relatively mild, tame assignment, but we're feeling this wind. We're in a burned forest, so we're surrounded by like these stalks of carbon, these totally burned trees, and we're hearing trees fall in the wind. And when a really big tree, you know, like 100-foot Doug fir, when that falls, it sounds like a bomb has dropped and it shakes the earth. So already you're standing in this high wind and then you hear these like bombs and feel this shaking. So we're already all kind of freaked out. Like, is a tree going to fall on us? A tree feels like it could fall on us at any moment. Then we start hearing that the fire we're on is putting up this huge smoke column, which usually is a sign that fire behavior has picked up and the fire is making a run. You know, it's making a huge push. And then we start hearing on the radio that the fire is, in fact, making a huge push. And not only that, but all of these fires all over Northern California are doing the same thing. There are just these massive columns, you know, as far as the eye can see.
At the same time, she got a call from her house sitter telling her that her house in the town of Happy Camp was in an immediate evacuation zone.
She tells me that there's a huge fire right outside town. It's coming for town. They're evacuating. And do I want her to take our dogs? And I get chills. I still get chills when I think about this because, you know, at this point, there's fire everywhere. There's a dangerous fire that I'm fighting. And then there's one at home. And I tell her to take the dogs and she took the dogs and evacuated. But our goat had to stay on the property. Our cat had run off. You know, you just have this feeling of like absolute free fall.
In the end, her home survived and so did her dogs, but her town didn't. Nearly half of the homes in Happy Camp were leveled and most residents didn't have fire insurance.
It's a tiny community to begin with. Only about 1,000 people live there. So to have half the community basically become homeless in a day was just absolutely, I don't have words. You know, I don't live there anymore, but I think the recovery process has been ongoing for so many people because it takes a long time to do the environmental remediation and remove the debris from a burned home. And then it takes a really long time to battle with insurance, if you're fortunate enough to have fire insurance, and rebuild. And a lot of people didn't have fire insurance at all. So I think that process, that was 2020, we're 5 years later. I think a lot of people are still recovering.
And these same devastating scenarios are happening all over the country. Wildfires are one of the biggest forces of destruction, yet despite the rising stakes, local and federal wildfire budgets are slowing. The number of fires across the country are already tracking 57% higher than the 10-year average, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Meanwhile, agencies are lagging behind on taking proactive and reactive measures. Ramsey says one big proactive measure that scientists have called for is to strategically clear overgrown trees and brush.
Our forests are really overgrown. They're super dense with brush, with trees, with what in firefighting we call fuels, because that all just is fuel for these massive wildfires. So it is urgent. It is beyond urgent. It is past due. And what we really need to do is going in and deliberately thinning. So cutting down trees, cutting down brush, removing a lot of this material. And then we need to intentionally burn our forests. So a huge part of the problem is that historically, these forests would have burned and that would have been healthy, would have regenerated the landscape, thinned all of these fuels, reduced the risk of a high severity fire.
At the same time, she says agencies also need to improve reactive efforts and invest more in the firefighters who are putting their lives on the line.
We need many more wildland firefighters. We need them to be better paid and supported. They need health care. And wildfires have been understaffed for at least 5 years now. And that makes everything more dangerous for the people who are out there. You know, if you don't have enough support, if you don't have other crews to work alongside you, if you don't have an engine to bring water when you need it, it really puts the lives of these firefighters at risk. So yeah, we need an investment from the federal government in more people who are better paid, not fewer. So it really is, it's hard to watch.
Ramsey no longer fights fires out west, but she's still working to raise awareness of the broken system by sharing her own experience. Her new memoir, Wildfire Days, tells the story of her 2 years on the front lines as part of a hotshot crew. To learn more about this topic and our guest, Kelly Ramsey, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amir Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the untold impact of the interstate system on Black America when Viewpoints returns.
Are you wet shaving? You'll get razor bumps.
Nah, Pops, I'm good with Gillette Skin Guard. How long you been growing that beard mama hates anyway?
Since 77. I shaved and got ingrown so bad.
That's why I use the Gillette Skin Guard razor, face scrub, shave gel, and moisturizer. So I don't have to worry about new razor bumps or shaving irritation.
Gillette Skin Guard, huh? Your mama's gonna love this one.
The best a man can get keeps getting better with Gillette Skin Guard. Buy now at a retailer near you.
Progressive knows when you own a boat or RV, it's like you're automatically on vacation. Even if you're actually a marriage counselor in the middle of couples therapy. But in your mind, you're camping in Acadia. Puttering around Frenchman Bay. Your boat and RV are both protected. Your lobster drenched in butter and... Uh-oh, did your clients just notice you weren't listening? Quick, do the thing where you just repeat back exactly what they said but as a question. They bought it. Now back to Maine. Earning an automatic discount bundling your boat or RV with your home or auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
July 4th may be over, but Macy's July 4th sale is still on with everything you need to keep the vibe going all summer long. Hosting? Turn your backyard into a party destination with 40 to 50% off outdoor dining and entertaining. Beachbound? Turn heads in this season's hottest swimsuits, sundresses, and more. Get away with the kids? Superpower their summer with 25 to 60% off toys from Nerf and more. But hurry, because the sale ends tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes. So it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
The Black Bottom neighborhood, an area on the Near East Side of Detroit, Michigan, got its name from the rich marsh soils it was built on. Throughout the 1800s and early 1900s, it was a vibrant and predominantly Black community that grew to a population of 100,000 people. Kids played on quiet side streets, jazz music floated on a breeze from the local record store, and independent community shops, from the barbershop to the neighborhood grocer, always had a steady stream of customers. In the evenings, adults frequented the vibrant entertainment district for live music. For many years, the town was an ideal place to live. Then, one day in the early 1960s, the city of Detroit sent out eviction letters. These notices gave 30 days for thousands of homeowners and 300 black-owned businesses to vacate. City leaders wanted to demolish the town to create a new highway system. But looking back today, activists like Deborah Archer argue that leaders used this and other projects as an excuse to remove African Americans.
I think far too often we think that highways took blighted neighborhoods, because that's the narrative, right? Highways were part of this focus on urban revitalization and focused on removing blight. But the way that we defined blight had a racial lens to it. And we targeted Black communities and said that they were blighted when in fact they were vibrant communities central to life for the many people who live there.
Archer is the president of the American Civil Liberties Union and is a professor of law at the New York University School of Law. She's also the faculty director of the Community Equity Initiative and is the author of Dividing Lines: How Transportation Infrastructure Reinforces Racial Inequality. Although Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 ended racial segregation in public places, Archer says city leaders still racially discriminated and segregated under the cover of urban renewal.
We have all these amazing and powerful, beautifully written civil rights laws, but the racialization of transportation infrastructure in so many ways shows the limits of those laws, because it's easier to change a discriminatory law than it is to tear down a highway or to tear down a bridge once set up.
During the mid-1900s, city planners that were tasked with constructing new highways and bridges across the U.S. built on areas where property was cheap. This was usually where people of color lived as a consequence of redlining, a now illegal practice that discriminated against minorities by disproportionately denying them access to loans or insurance to buy property. While it's impossible to fully right these wrongs, Archer says there's still an opportunity to make some amends.
The way to address this is to address it head on, to have real and honest conversations about how our communities got the way that they are, to have real and honest conversations about the disproportionate impact that our transportation infrastructure is having, that we continue to ask communities of color to bear all of the negative impacts, right? The destroying homes and businesses, the impact on air quality and on noise, and then allow those folks to enjoy fewer of the benefits. So we have to focus on more distributional equality.
The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021 was a bipartisan effort passed by Congress to address some of these issues. Through this initiative, divided communities are being reconnected by modern engineering and planning. One such example is the reconstruction of the Interstate 65 I-70 interchange in Indianapolis. The Indiana Department of Transportation has teamed up with the Rethink Coalition of Indianapolis for the project. Brenda Frege is president and CEO of the Rethink Coalition and explains how getting to this point took time in itself.
Rethink Coalition made a pretty big shift from protest group to now collaborative leader, and that has made all the difference for us. We knew being a protest group was important to begin with. That was the only voice we had at the moment. But we eventually got a seat at the table in conversations and discussions. We formed as a nonprofit, and we've taken on this role of really trying to bring all the voices together, all the stakeholders, all the decision makers, so that everyone's aware of what the vision, the overarching vision is for downtown.
Right now, most of the highways in Indianapolis are elevated and expansive. These wide roadways are an eyesore that block out nature and reduce walkability. Frege says the goal is to create new recessed highways that run lower in the ground and are less obstructive. This new highway would open up 65 to 70 new acres of land that would be transformed into parks and tree-lined connecting walkways.
really focusing on what happens if you compress the footprint, you push it down below grade. Right now it's all elevated. Push it down below grade, start building land bridges over the top to reconnect everything. So it's a slow process, but there's momentum. And, you know, we're planning for the next 50 years. So it takes a while to get all the pieces to come together, but we're seeing real progress.
And Indianapolis isn't alone. Other places have recognized the need to reconnect neighborhoods that were abruptly split apart by transportation infrastructure. Cities like Boston, Minneapolis-St. Paul, Cincinnati, Columbus, Ohio, and Dallas. While funding for infrastructure investment and revitalization may be impacted by future government funding cuts, Archer still remains optimistic.
I am hopeful because when you look at all that we have accomplished, all that we have done to get to where we are, there's only reasons to be hopeful that we can continue to push forward together, support each other, and make this country more equitable, more just for everyone.
Deborah Archer's book, Dividing Lines: How Transportation Infrastructure Reinforces Racial Inequality, is available now online and can be requested through your local bookstore. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson. This segment is sponsored by Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Whoa, it's you, the Capital One Bank guy.
That's what they call me.
Mind if I get a selfie?
Yeah, sure thing. Say no fees or minimums on your
Capital One
checking account.
Wow, that's a keeper. So, where are you heading?
I'm off to spread the good news that Capital One helps people keep more money in their wallet with no overdraft fees.
Oh, you're the best Capital One Bank guy.
Hey, mind if I get a selfie?
Sure.
Say, Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
I can't believe how spotless my floors look after using the Swiffer Power Mop. No more dragging around a heavy mop and messy bucket. Now I get the same deep clean without all the work. Thanks to the powerful solution and scrubbing pad of the Swiffer Power Mop, dirt and grime don't stand a chance, and I don't break a sweat. Mic drop. I mean, mop drop.
Swiffer Power Mop. Swiffer Power Mop.
A smarter way to mop. Try it or your money back.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. It's been almost 4 years since the Taliban, a conservative Islamist group, retook control of Afghanistan. Since then, life for women and girls continues to grow worse. Getting an education and working, most jobs are off limits. Even basic health care can be denied if they show up alone. According to the United Nations Human Rights Monitors, women are now barred from public spaces, running small businesses, and in some areas, even entering shops without a male relative. In hospitals, female patients who've shown up alone have reportedly been turned away. And in parts of the Northeast, religious minorities have faced threats of forced conversion. At the same time, a growing number of Afghans are returning to the country, and this is often not by choice. The UN reports that in just 1 month, over 250,000 people re-entered Afghanistan, with tens of thousands being deported from Iran and Pakistan. This influx is putting added pressure on a country already stretched thin. Afghanistan's economy has slowed since 2021, and more than half of the population now depends on international aid. Despite the growing economic and humanitarian crises, senior Taliban leaders continue to defend their actions with religious and cultural arguments. But for many women in the country, the reality is stark. Returning doesn't mean safety. It often means fewer rights, less freedom, and no clear path forward. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. The stakes are high for Warner Brothers' new movie, Superman. A reboot for maybe the most iconic character in comics from writer-director James Gunn, and an attempt to reboot the entire DC universe, which has largely played second fiddle to the booming Marvel Cinematic Universe for the past decade plus. Richard Donner's original Superman movie starring Christopher Reeve in 1978 was a mega hit that's often credited with kicking off the modern era of superhero entertainment. And for decades, DC's characters, which include Supes, Batman, Wonder Woman, and The Flash, were largely seen as the default most famous superheroes in the world. Of course, Marvel has always had its stars too, namely Spider-Man and the X-Men. But the MCU managed to propel Iron Man, Captain America, and even formerly lesser-known characters like Ant-Man and the Guardians of the Galaxy to the forefront of the superhero consciousness for an entire generation of moviegoers. Since then, though, the last few MCU entries have been met with some indifference at the box office and online, and WB and DC Comics seem to hope that now is the time to regain the title of the most iconic active superhero brand. And those hopes currently lay at the feet of James Gunn, who's not only the creative engine behind the new Superman, but who also serves as co-CEO of DC Studios. His reinvention of Superman, starring David Corenswet, Rachel Brosnahan, and Nicholas Hoult, appears to be an attempt at re-emphasizing the aspirational and heroic nature of the Man of Steel. And if all goes well, the movie's also set to serve as the launching pad for an entire new era of DC Comics blockbusters. No pressure or anything. James Gunn's Superman is in theaters on July 11th. I'm Evan Rook.
Are you wet shaving? You'll get razor bumps.
Nah, Pops, I'm good with Gillette Skin Guard. How long you been growing that beard Mama hates anyway?
Since 77. I shaved and got ingrown so bad.
That's why I use the Gillette Skin Guard razor, face scrub, shave gel, and moisturizer, so I don't have to worry about new razor bumps or shaving irritation.
Gillette Skin Guard, huh? Your mama's gonna love this one.
The best a man can get keeps getting better with Gillette Skin Guard. Buy now at a retailer near you.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
That's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
So, what's your boat? A boat for fishing, a boat for skiing, a pontoon boat for partying? Or are you thinking personal watercraft? Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing summer fun. Motorcycles, ATVs, campers, motorhomes, and convertibles too. Great rates, great service, great fun. Local lenders lending local money. Quick and easy loan approval. It's the way financing should be. Stop in and visit with a CCU lender today. CCU can set you up with great rate financing approval, so when you find your boat, you're ready to float. Summer's just too short not to enjoy every moment you can on the water, on the road, or off the road camping or ATVing. Stop in, call, or apply online at ccuwausau.com for your great rate. Whatever floats summer fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. We finance fun.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the WIAA, are the 178,000 high school sports students in Wisconsin. And so we stand. We stand for the runners, soccer, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, administrators, and officials. We stand for the swimmers, football players, and wrestlers. We stand for the golfers, softball, and volleyball players.
We stand as the national leader and advocate for high school athletics and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
This week on Viewpoints.
We didn't just want to study at Harvard, we wanted to study in America. We believe in American values, we wanted to contribute to the American economy, and we wanted to pursue the hope of the American dream.
Inside the battle between the president and the nation's top university, then.
According to some studies, the McDonald's arches are more recognizable worldwide than the Christian cross.
The global appeal of the fast food chains we frequent and love. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2024 Nielsen report.
The Peace Lily is so last year. Hey, has anyone worked with Fiddlenecks?
Shelby's popular flower shop is in full bloom.
We just got a request for an arrangement that evokes air. Who's up for that challenge? No?
She needs to hire a floral designer to nip foliage faux pas in the bud.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our advanced matching helps find talented candidates so you can connect with them fast. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Over the past few months, the current administration has been at war with Harvard University. Widely regarded as the top university in the U.S., Harvard has faced criticism for refusing to comply with President Donald Trump's policies. These are policies that would restructure admissions guidelines and hiring practices, as well as cut DEI programs. As a consequence, the Trump administration froze more than $2 billion in grant funding. And in response, the school filed a lawsuit, marking the beginning of an intense legal battle between both sides.
The Trump administration's claim is that Harvard has had a spike in anti-Semitic incidents on campus and that the university has not responded appropriately to that anti-Semitism. Harvard then received from the federal government a list of demands, a wide list of demands that cover how they admit students, what type of faculty they hire, how they do their research, really issues that get to the core of Harvard's mission. And in response, Harvard filed a lawsuit alleging that the Trump administration was violating, among other rights, the university's First Amendment rights.
That's Elora Mukherjee, a clinical professor of law at Columbia Law School and director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic. Although the conflict has been going on for a while, last month the rift escalated. The Department of Homeland Security banned Harvard from enrolling international students, which make up a quarter of the school's student body. Even with warnings from the administration that this could happen, the decision still came as a complete shock to Alfred Williamson, a rising sophomore at Harvard and an international student from England.
I essentially got home, I opened my phone, I saw the news, and I didn't know whether I was suddenly considered an illegal immigrant by the White House, or as they describe people like myself, an illegal alien. I was scared. I was in disbelief. I did not ever expect this to happen. I thought that Trump, his threat to remove the status of international students, was simply a scare tactic. And my American friends never expected this. So I was just in complete shock and I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to do. And the rest of the international community was in the same boat. You know, international students had fought for years for the opportunity to attend Harvard, and that was taken away within a matter of moments. And, you know, including myself, the rest of the international community, we didn't just want to study at Harvard, we wanted to study in America. We believe in American values, we wanted to contribute to the American economy, and we wanted to pursue the hope of the American dream. And Trump took that away from international students in a matter of seconds.
In June, a federal judge blocked President Trump's order banning international students from attending Harvard. The judge also blocked a directive from DHS Secretary Kristi Noem that would have forced international students to transfer or risk losing their legal status. But both rulings are only temporary. For students like Williamson, this state of limbo is stressful.
Of course, it's good news hearing that the judge has blocked the order, and they did that previously when they took away the visa statuses as well. And that provided a little hope, but we keep seeing the Trump administration will try and take another route to subvert Harvard and to punish international students for attending an institution that refuses to bow down to the Trump administration's demands. So right now, I have no idea. Right now, we're okay for next week and maybe the week after, but 2 months' time, I don't know. And it's not enough for the international students, the international community, to have their places guaranteed for the next week or two. We want it for the next 4 years.
Williamson says many of his peers have changed their plans for the summer out of fear that their visas could get revoked. Instead of going home to see family, many are now spending their break near campus. For those living in campus housing, this meant scrambling to find and afford a place to stay this summer. And for students thinking of transferring out to avoid the craziness, that option's off the table too, as most application deadlines for next year have already passed.
I've had many international friends who are also too scared to speak out, who were too scared to go home. And they weren't all from countries that Trump has a big issue with. They were people from European countries like Spain and France. And even they were too scared to go back to their home countries because they thought that they would not be allowed to return. So a lot of them stayed at Harvard to do research or to do other work simply because they thought that they'd lose their education if they tried to go back. As for transferring and things like that, all the application deadlines have passed, all the transfer deadlines have passed. So that's not a formal option for anyone. I'm sure there's some universities that might be sympathetic and might be able to make exceptions. But most people don't want to look into that because it's essentially admitting defeat.
And it's not just Harvard students that are afraid. Mukherjee says international students across the country have had their visas revoked, though judges are issuing orders blocking those terminations. Specifically, the U.S. State Department is targeting Chinese students, announcing their intention to aggressively revoke visas for those with connections to the Chinese Communist Party or studying in critical fields. With all the legal uncertainty and unrest, Mukherjee agrees it's safest for international students to remain in the U.S. for now.
I've been advising international students that they should stay in the United States. I know that many international students have plans to travel abroad this summer, but given the deep uncertainty in immigration law and policy, literally, immigration law seems to be changing week to week, day to day. It is safer for international students to remain in the United States. If people are in the United States, it is much easier for them to have their status, their legal status, reinstituted. It is much more difficult for an individual who is abroad when their visa is terminated or abroad when their status is terminated to come back into the United States.
Harvard's case is still making its way through court, and no one can predict the outcome. But if Trump's ban does go into effect, it would be unprecedented. Mukherjee says she's only aware of 3 prior cases where a university or college lost its certification to host international students, and those were all due to fraud, not for publicly disagreeing with the federal government. If the ban is upheld, Harvard would lose a chunk of their student body, and this impact would stretch far beyond their campus bounds.
International students are a vibrant part of every aspect of Harvard campus life, research, teaching. And I think as the Harvard complaint says in federal court, Harvard wouldn't be Harvard without its international students. A decision to ban Harvard from enrolling international students would have devastating effects for thousands of people across the world who have made enormous sacrifices. And not being able to enroll these students would have devastating consequences for American public life, for research in the sciences, for research in health advancements, and for every aspect of human progress.
Williamson knows the future for the school will be tough with this legal battle, but is still planning to return in the fall to study physics and government. At the same time, he knows that nothing is guaranteed. In the meantime, he's using his voice to advocate for himself and other international students, despite knowing that there may be consequences.
so many international students are too afraid to speak or say what I'm saying. And it's not because the handful of us who are willing to speak out are particularly brave. We might actually be naive, we might be sacrificing our education just for using our voice. And I completely understand why most international students are too scared to speak. And I was told by my friends, my family, my peers, not to speak out because of the risks that presents to myself. I think Americans need to be very careful of what that means for American democracy. It's a country that was founded on freedom of speech.
For now, the legal battle continues, and only time will tell how it shakes out. To learn more about this topic and our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes and to support our show, follow Viewpoints Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and X. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, exploring America's deep-rooted ties to fast food when Viewpoints returns.
What's the one sale you can't miss? It's the Macy's One Day Sale. Come into Macy's and find the best prices of the month on thousands of incredible summer deals. From Levi's shorts for just $29.99 to Guy's fresh Alfani sneakers for the same price. From microfiber sheet sets $9.99 to $19.99 to over half off a 2-carat total weight diamond bridal set ring. Half off. It's a day unlike any other day. The Macy's One Day Sale. Today. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Progressive knows when you own a boat or RV, it's like you're automatically on vacation, even if you're actually a marriage counselor in the middle of couples therapy. But in your mind, you're camping in Acadia, puttering around Frenchman Bay. Your boat and RV are both protected, your lobster drenched in butter and... Uh-oh, did your clients just notice you weren't listening? Quick, do the thing where you just repeat back exactly what they said but as a question. They bought it. Now back to Maine, earning an automatic discount bundling your boat or RV with your home or auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Whether you frequent it or not, fast food is a part of American culture. Most of us share fond memories of opening up a McDonald's Happy Meal or grabbing a Wendy's chocolate frosty on a warm summer night. Whatever it may be, these fast food items and chains are ubiquitous while living in the U.S.
There's a Texas chain called Whataburger, which is wildly popular. It's in about 10 states now, but it was born in Texas and is really part of the Texas iconography. And yeah, my friends and I used to go there. It was the last thing we did before our curfews when we were in high school is go to Whataburger and get hamburgers, or they start serving breakfast at 11 p.m., which is kind of a stroke of brilliance for a company to start serving breakfast food for people who are going to the rodeo or on their way back from a night out and just want to have something kind of comforting.
That's Adam Chandler, journalist and author of Drive Through Dreams, a journey through the heart of America's fast food kingdom. Chandler lives in Brooklyn, New York now, but grew up in Houston, Texas, where Friday night football and a greasy hamburger with French fries are king.
Whenever I go back to Texas to visit family or see friends, I have to stop at Whataburger. It's part of setting the place of where I am. It reminds me of home. So I think it'll always be part of that experience for me.
Chandler has always been interested in the evolution and prevalence of fast food, tracing its roots all the way back to 100 years ago.
To be historically accurate, fast food is about 100 years old. You can trace it back to the founding of two chains, A&W and White Castle, which sort of presented this kind of highly regimented, systematized, very uniform production and made it accessible to Americans. And when I say all those words, I kind of mean it as this was a time when there wasn't a lot of public trust in where you ate and what you'd get there. So what they did was create a product that was extremely consistent. Wherever you went, it was the exact same.
But nowadays, things are a lot different. There's a menu item for almost every craving. And in some towns, it seems like on every corner, there's another drive-through, from McDonald's Golden Arches to the pink and orange Dunkin' Donuts logo. Chandler says this rapid growth came with the mass construction of highways and the move away from dirty cities to a shiny new suburbia.
The last 50 or 60 years, you can trace fast food to the building of the highways after World War II. And that creation of the suburbs and families moving out, white flight from urban centers, and really a more mobile American workforce. People had commutes and they wanted to go out and they wanted to eat quickly. They needed places to go when they were on the road. And as women entered the workforce, basically fast food became more of a stand-in for a traditional family meal. It became less important to eat your meals at home and more important to have everyone gather quickly and cheaply.
While White Castle and A&W were the first fast food chains, the success of McDonald's changed the industry forever. The burger joint's operation model quickly gained the attention of other brands.
McDonald's specifically was such an operation that people were envious of, and it spawned all kinds of chains. Burger King was one major chain, Taco Bell. All of these places either started in Southern California or were founded, you know, chains were founded by people who'd taken a trip to San Bernardino, California to see the original McDonald's in action and copied it mercilessly, replicated the model that they used. No tableware, no plates, no wait staff. It was served through a window, paper wrapping, everything you could throw away, disposable and quick and cheap. And that became the model for what we see today, even still.
While the main operation models have stayed largely similar to the past, menu items have largely shifted in recent decades. One of the biggest differences is the obvious change in portion sizes.
Even in the days of White Castle, the little sliders that you think of when you think of White Castle were kind of a norm for the day. They weren't huge, and even diner burgers at that time were pretty small. But after World War II, as we sort of reached this moment of prosperity where beef was cheap and Americans had money to spend on food, we start to see the portion sizes grow quicker and quicker as more people have access to food, as refrigeration becomes extremely commonplace after being kind of something that only certain people had. You know, American policy really favors food that's made cheaply. And that just means that the portion sizes go bigger and bigger. And that's seen as a virtue for a lot of Americans to have a really large meal for cheap, even though there are obviously plenty of drawbacks to that model.
But as consumer preferences shift, fast food companies must find different ways to stay current in the competitive restaurant industry. A prime example of this response by companies is the recent introduction of plant-based meat on the menu.
You can get that at White Castle. You can get that at Burger King. You can get Beyond Meat at Dunkin' Donuts now. And these are all things that are going to drive people to be a little bit more curious who may not have sought it out. I don't think it's necessarily for diehard vegetarians or people who are vegan or sensing that they want to change their diet so much as people who are just kind of curious about what the trend is and seeing, you know, is this something that I want to incorporate in my life? So in that way, it's kind of exciting.
Finding new ways to appeal to larger demographics and stay in touch with an ever-changing customer base are two challenges. However, many chains have found success by listening to customer feedback and being vocal on several social media platforms.
The Twitter presences of certain brands really speak to younger consumers in a way that they don't necessarily speak to the same as older consumers. There was the story of a guy who tweeted out to Wendy's, "How do I get a year of free chicken nuggets? How many retweets do I need?" And they responded, 18 million. Which has never been done before. The most had been 3 million, which was Ellen DeGeneres at the Oscars. Everyone knows that famous selfie. But this young kid from Nevada named Carter Wilkerson really decided, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. So he started tweeting it out, and he had 150 followers when it started, and he actually broke Ellen's record because there was something so recognizable and fun about quest of a teenage kid wanting to have a year free supply of nuggets.
And it's not just younger generations that are drawn to the fun of fast food. Many American chains have found success outside of our borders.
When you look at the menu items that have opened up in different countries, you really kind of see this local refraction of tastes filtered through a place like McDonald's or KFC or Taco Bell or Burger King. It's exciting to see kosher Big Macs at McDonald's in Israel. It's fun to go to a Taco Bell in India and have no beef on the menu at all. And I think that those are interesting reflections of what they call glocalization, which is this local sensibility sort of projected onto these global brands. So there is something kind of jarring about seeing a major brand in a faraway place that's recognizable. According to some studies, the McDonald's arches are more recognizable worldwide than the Christian cross, which is crazy if you think about it.
On a given day, around 84 million adults eat fast food, according to the CDC. This equates to more than a third of all American adults. It's safe to say that fast food chains are here to stay. Who knows what the next big menu item or sweeping trend in fast food will be? Only time will tell. To find out more about our guest, Adam Chandler, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also, check out his book on the history of fast food, titled Drive-Thru Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. For more behind the scenes, search Viewpoints Radio on Twitter and Facebook. This segment originally aired in September 2019 and was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. Studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Shopping with your parents can be embarrassing.
Why would they sell jeans with holes in them? I'm going to speak to the manager.
Mom!
That hoodie is giving. You should get it. YOLO.
Thanks to the Chase mobile app, your kid can shop independently while you keep an eye on their spending. So you can go from...
We can be twinsies!
To...
How was shopping? Saw you stayed on budget.
Thanks, Mom.
Freedom for kids. Control for parents. That's family banking from Chase.
Account subject to approval. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet. Find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Earlier this month, you may have had the day off work for Juneteenth. The yearly federal holiday is fairly new and falls on Juneteenth. Hence the name. While you may have spent the day relaxing outside or catching up on housework, it's important to understand the significance of Juneteenth. Going back to January 1st, 1863, and on this day, President Abraham Lincoln signed into effect the Emancipation Proclamation. This executive order declared an end to slavery and stated that, quote, all persons held as slaves are and henceforward shall be free, end quote. While slavery officially ended on this date, it took more than 2 years for Union Army troops to enforce the law across all Southern Confederate states. Juneteenth marks the day on June 19, 1865, that about 250,000 slaves in Texas learned of their freedom. The Civil War had ended just 2 months before, and this was the last remaining enslaved population. Juneteenth represents the end of a barbaric practice that spanned more than 200 years and ruined the lives of an estimated 10 million Africans who were enslaved. The day is also an important reminder that equality is not always given, and the fight continues to end racial bias and discrimination. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment.
Last year by now, we were well into a brat summer. And even before Charlie XCX's mega hit album, we had already received new music from Ariana Grande, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, and Dua Lipa. While Sabrina Carpenter's album Short and Sweet was an August release, both of her singles, Espresso and Please Please Please, were dominating the airwaves by June as well. So where are the mainstream hits of 2025? A quick look at the Billboard charts doesn't provide many answers. As of mid-June, typically a gold rush for Song of the Summer contenders, the top 10 on the Billboard chart was dominated mostly by songs that came out last year. Shaboozy's A Bar Song is a mainstay. Ditto Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars' team-up Die With a Smile. Kendrick Lamar and SZA's Luther, Benson Boone's Beautiful Things, and Alex Warden's Ordinary are also 2024 releases. Morgan Wallen has given country fans some new ammunition in 2025. And sure, Sabrina Carpenter released a splashy single, Manchild, with a full album on the way. But she can't do it all on her own. New albums from Miley Cyrus and Lil Wayne have failed to propel anything into the Song of the Summer race, and things are starting to seem pretty dire, especially compared to the past few summers. Now, maybe this is premature, and a massive song or two are coming our way in July, but this slow start to summer music season does beg the question, is this just an anomalous year that hasn't seen a big album grab the culture's attention? Or is this the way things are moving in a streaming-first society where everything's on demand and nothing needs to grab everyone? The answer to that question remains to be seen. I'm Evan Rook.
What's the one sale you can't miss? It's the Macy's One Day Sale. Come into Macy's and find the best prices of the month on thousands of incredible summer deals. From Levi's shorts for just $29.99 to Guy's fresh Alfani sneakers for the same price. From microfiber sheet sets $9.99 to $19.99 to over half off a 2-carat total weight diamond bridal set ring. Half off. It's a day unlike any other day. The Macy's One Day Sale. Today. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Charmin Ultra Strong. You can use less, better than the rest. Charmin Ultra Strong. Your booty pass the clean text. Yeah. Diamond wave texture, it's the best. Study up, teach a lesson on fresh. Your booty pass the clean text.
Yes, sir.
Charmin Ultra Strong.
Charmin Ultra Strong with diamond weave texture cleans better than the leading one-ply brand, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
So, what's your boat? A boat for fishing, a boat for skiing, a pontoon boat for partying? Or are you thinking personal watercraft? Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing summer fun. Motorcycles, ATVs, campers, motorhomes, and convertibles too. Great rates, great service, great fun. Local lenders lending local money. Quick and easy loan approval. It's the way financing should be. Stop in and visit with a CCU lender today. CCU can set you up with great rate financing approval, so when you find your boat, you're ready to float. Summer's just too short not to enjoy every moment you can on the water, on the road, or off the road camping or ATVing. Stop in, call, or apply online at ccuwausau.com for your great rate. Whatever floats summer fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. We finance fun.
So, how are the kids?
Well, Emily made the honor roll.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, we're really proud of her. Tyler, on the other hand, though.
What's going on?
He's been moody lately, just feeling down and not like himself.
Oh, we've been there. Nick was struggling last spring. He was so anxious and stressed.
Really? What helped?
Well, he joined the soccer team. And ever since, he's been a lot happier. He has more energy, he's less stressed, and he's definitely in a better mood at home. It's made a huge difference.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad he's getting out of the house, he's getting some exercise, and he's off his phone for once. It's been good for his mental health.
Sounds like it's been good for your mental health, too.
Participating in Wisconsin high school sports improves students' physical and mental health. Encourage your son or daughter to get involved. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Crews and community members are out searching for any survivors of Friday's flash flooding in Central Texas. Brian Blackbird's among them, looking for his family.
We're still hoping for the best, but that's about all we can do in that and pray.
They went missing when the river rose more than 25 feet in less than an hour. After a legal battle, the Trump administration's deported 8 men to Sudan. CBS's Christopher Cruz with details.
The men are from Cuba, Mexico, Laos, Myanmar, Sudan, and Vietnam. They'd all been convicted of serious crimes. South Sudanese officials say they plan to reach out to the deportees' home governments to ask if the men will be allowed to return.
Ceasefire talks are expected today in Qatar. Linda Gradstein says they come a day before Israel's prime minister comes to Washington.
President Trump has made it clear that he would like to announce a 60-day ceasefire between Israel and Hamas while Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in the White House.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.